Good morning. Are you glad that you're here? Oh man, that was terrible. Are you glad that you're here? All right, that's better. I couldn't help but think when Gene sent the kids to children's worship, the wording that you used, I just think it was kind of funny. It's time to release the kids. They've been captive. Release the children. Set the children free. Oh, and Doug, it is, you know, you up here talking about being thankful for our blessings. And I know you speak from a standpoint of, in your own life, what you've been through the last couple of months with your surgery and all the complications and how things were. I know you and Diane give thanks every day for where you are in terms of your health. And I know that means a lot to you. It certainly means a lot to us. We welcome you to Northeast. We are a church. If we were going to define what we're about, our credo or our mission or our purpose, we've boiled it down to three things. And this isn't everything that we're about, and it isn't all that we're about, but these are things we like to focus on as a church because we believe that what the Lord is calling us to be, and that is to be a church that loves God, grows deeper in the faith, and deeper in our relationships with each other, our own relationship with God. And the third thing here, actually, this sermon series is connected to this third purpose, and that is the fact that we have been called to share Jesus. And so this series, and I entitled it Living Proof, is about that issue, and that is, what do we have to share? What is our message? How do we share Jesus? And why do we share Jesus? It's because we believe his claim that he is indeed the holy, divine, eternal Son of God who came to this earth to live and serve and ultimately die for our sins, and that he was raised from the dead. And so last week we looked at the passage from John 14:6, where Jesus says in his discussion with the disciples, I am the way, I am the truth, and I am the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. And we looked at that statement, and I asked you to look at that statement in light of your own personal life and conviction. Do you believe that? And if you do believe that is true, how does it make a difference in your life? Do you believe that Jesus is the living proof of the living God? And so we talked about this burden of proof and how much proof do you need to believe something? Because when it comes right down to it, we all deal with issues of doubt and faith. We all operate on these levels and all think about such things. You may say, I don't believe that Jesus is the Son of God. I don't believe his claims. And you might say, well, yes, I do. And so I ask you the question, why do you believe what you believe? Is it something that's just been handed down to you and it's kind of a borrowed faith, or is it your own? Have you come to the conclusions that you have come to based on your own personal investigation, your own seeking and searching and looking at the evidence? I believe there's evidence. But I also still believe we have to operate on the basis of faith. We don't just, if there is faith, there's an element of the unseen in faith, as we talked about last week from Hebrews 11. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. So you may say, I believe in God, I believe in Jesus, and this is why I believe it. And I know for some of you, faith has always come easy. I've talked to people before who say something to me like, you know, I've never had a problem believing. Maybe you were raised in a Christian home, maybe you were not, but I've always found it easy to believe, and the evidence is easy for me to accept. And yet I know there are some of you who struggle a little bit more. And you may be a little bit more of a skeptic. But that's okay too, because we cannot not feel how we feel about things. If you have doubt, you have doubt. The question is, what do you do with that doubt? I remember teaching a man several years ago. He was a member here, and we talked, and I taught him, and his wife was a member, and she was active, and he finally said to me one day, he said, I just think I'm bad soil. And he was referring to the parable of the sower and the soils and the good soil and the bad soil, and he just had a hard time struggling with his belief. But it's something that we all really do need to grapple with. I think it was Mike Johnson I was talking to last week after my sermon. And Mike, I think it was you, Mike. It may have been somebody else. I may have dreamed it or whatever. I do think it was you. And, you know, I can say, you know, I believe in Jesus. I believe in the afterlife. And yet, somebody else might say, well, I don't believe in Jesus. I don't believe in the afterlife. I don't believe there's life after death. But one of these days, we're going to find out, right? We're going to find out one way or another. And if I'm wrong in the final outcome of things, neither one of us will know about it, right? Think about it. We'll just be dead, and that's it, and you know, that none of us will know whether it's true or not, right? But if I'm right, if those who claim to have faith are right, then we'll both know about it, right? And so that's why this is so important. That's why when it comes to issue of faith and the impact of Jesus in lives, one reason I'm going to this story this morning. And it's the encounter that Jesus had with the woman at the well. It occurs in Samaria. This account is only included in the Gospel of John. The Synoptic Gospels, a lot of the material in Matthew, Mark, and Luke is similar, and sometimes they talk about the same stories. John has a lot of original content in his story because it's written in the 90s AD, and so these other writings had gone out. Some of them are being copied and shared. And John wanted to give the story the perspective from his own personal experience because he was a disciple, an apostle of Jesus Christ, and he was there. He says in 1 John 1, he says, that which we've seen, that which we've heard, that which we've handled, that which we saw with our own eyes, we declare to you so that our fellowship may be with God and with each other. He says, I want you to know it was real and I was there. Now, John was not there when Jesus has this conversation, with a lot of this conversation he had with this Samaritan woman at the well, but I don't have any doubt that later on Jesus relates to his disciples this conversation that he had with her. And so they take a route. They take a route from the south in Judea, and they're going north to Galilee, the text tells us. And surprisingly, Jesus chooses to take the direct route to the north. Typically, a Jew would go to the east of the Jordan River, and cut back in once they pass Samaria and head back up to where they're going in the north. And a lot of times, this was simply because the Jews didn't have anything to do with Samaritans, and vice versa. I'm not going to get into it this morning, but going back centuries, there was a lot of bad blood and hostility between those in Samaria and those to the south. It goes back to the division of the northern and southern kingdoms, but it also had a lot to do with how they viewed the Jewish religion and what was the right and true way. When the northern kingdom fell to the Assyrians typically would import and deport people to strengthen their power. And so when the northern kingdom fell because of their sin and idolatry, a lot of people were moved in there who did not have belief in Yahweh God, and they intermarried and shared their religion with those in the north, and the religion in the north was more of a blend, was more of a syncretic religion that was the worship of Yahweh, but it was the worship of false gods as well that they incorporated into their life. And there was hostility that had occurred with battles and wars, and the south would join other forces in fighting the north, and it was the folks to the south that eventually destroyed the rival temple that the people in the north, who they had erected it on Mount Gerizim. And so there's just bad blood all around. And yet Jesus chooses this route for a reason. And he does it by eventually talking to this woman. And I'm jumping ahead here. Who eventually becomes a living witness of Jesus. She experiences the living proof herself. And becomes a witness to those in town. And so what I'm going to do right now, I'm going to do something a little bit unusual. I'm going to ask you to follow along with me as we see this encounter as it's portrayed in the series, The Chosen. How many of you have watched all or part of The Chosen? There's a lot of hands there. And I'll just tell you right off the bat, when it comes to things in the media that will help strengthen my faith in a sense, not that I don't believe things, but a series like The Chosen helps me to connect emotionally to the story. And while we all like to read a passage in the Bible and see it with our mind's eye, I think the folks who produced this series did an excellent job of helping us see how things could have how it could have looked and how it could have happened. And, you know, the dialogue is true to Scripture, and there's other dialogue in the story that's not there. It's how it could have been. And so I want you to keep that in mind as you view this. But I think, nonetheless, this seven-minute video is very, very powerful. And I will say from a personal standpoint, there are several scenes in The Chosen where, I tell you what, it will bring me to tears. And I hope you appreciate it as much as I do. So we're going to view that right now. So we're going to go to the movies for 7 minutes right now. Jesus is heading north with his disciples. They stop at Jacob's well, and this is where the scene picks up. Make sure it's turned up.
Would you give me a drink? Did you hear me?
That's bad, huh?
What?
You, a Jew, ask for a drink from me, a Samaritan, and a woman.
I'm sorry. I should have said please.
You know, it's not safe for you to be alone out here.
Nor you. Why haven't you come with others? Why so late in the day? Don't women come to the wells in the cool of the morning?
Yeah, well, none of them will be seen with me, so I have to come at noon, in the heat, as you have so kindly reminded me.
Why won't they be seen with you?
Long story.
I'd still like a drink of water, if you can spare it.
Amazing what a parched throat will do. Aren't I unclean to you? Won't you be defiled by this vessel?
Maybe some of my people say that about your women, but I don't.
Yeah? And what do you say?
I say if you knew who I am, you'd be asking me for a drink.
Really?
And I would give you living water.
Would. Except that you have nothing to draw water with, and this is a deep well. Besides, what do you need from me if you have your own supply of living water?
Long story.
But Jewish water is better than Samaritan water. Hmm?
That's not what I said.
Are you a better man than our ancestor Jacob, who dug this well? Your water is better than his?
I know Jacob. And everyone who drinks this water will thirst again. But whoever drinks the water that I give him will never be thirsty again.
Wouldn't that be nice?
The water I give will become in a person a spring of water welling up to eternal life.
Really?
Yes, really.
Prove it.
First, go and call your husband and come back. I will show you both.
I don't have a husband.
You are right. You've had 5 husbands. And the man you're living with now is not your husband.
Oh, I see. You're a prophet. You're here to preach at me.
No.
Usually the one good thing about coming here alone is I can escape being condemned.
I'm not here to condemn you.
I've made mistakes. Too many. But it's men like you who have made it impossible for me to do anything about it.
How?
Our ancestors worshipped on this mountain. But you Jews insist Jerusalem is the only place for true worship.
They say that because the temple is there.
Exactly where we're not allowed.
I'm here to break those barriers. And the time is coming when neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem will you worship the Father.
So, where am I supposed to go when I need God? I've never received anything from God, but I couldn't thank him even if I did.
Anywhere. God is spirit. And the time is coming and is now here that it won't matter where you worship, but only that you do it in spirit and truth. Heart and mind, that is the kind of worshiper he's looking for. It won't matter where you're from or what you've done. Do you believe what I'm telling you?
Until the Messiah comes and explains everything and sorts this mess out, including me, I don't trust in anyone.
You're wrong when you say that you've never received anything from God. This Messiah you speak of, I am he. The first one was named Ramin. You were a woman of purity who was excited to be married. But he wasn't a good man. He hurt you. And it made you question marriage and even the practice of your faith.
Stop it.
The second was Farzad. On your wedding night, his skin smelled like oranges. And to this day, every time you pass by the oranges in the market, you feel guilty for leaving him. Because he was the only truly godly man you've been with. But you felt unworthy.
Why are you doing this?
I have not revealed myself to the public as the Messiah. You are the first. It would be good if you believed me.
You picked the wrong person.
I came to Samaria just to meet you. Do you think it's an accident that I'm here in the middle of the day?
I am rejected by others.
I know. But not by the Messiah.
And you know these things. Because you are the Christ. I'm going to tell everyone.
I was counting on it.
Spirit and truth.
Spirit and truth.
It won't be all about mountains or temples.
Soon, just the heart.
You promise?
I promise.
told me everything I've done. Oh, he must be the Christ!
Hey, wait!
Your water!
You forgot your
Fancy, a man who told me everything I ever did!
Rabbi, we got food. What would you like?
I have food to eat that you do not know about.
Who got you food?
I hope you enjoyed that and maybe got some insight. Once again, I recognize that some of this dialogue that you have, you say, well, I don't see that in there where he's talking about her husband. But it's clear he had a conversation with this woman, and certainly the text does not reflect every single, you know, she leaves saying, he told me every single thing I've ever done. So obviously they had more of a conversation there. So I want to do a couple of points related to Jesus's attitude in this story. And the first one is this. Let's not forget that Jesus frequently focused on the one. A lot of times we think about this whole concept of evangelism, and maybe the first thing that comes to mind is what is, you know, spoken to a group of people in a crowd, and Jesus did that. But think of all the times in the ministry of Jesus that he takes the time to focus on one person, one individual. He does it not only with this woman, but he does it with the woman with the hemorrhage who touches his garment, and he stops and says, who touched me? And then he focused on her. He did the same thing in his conversation with Nicodemus, the Pharisee who had questions about Jesus and about faith. Jesus took the time to pause and spend time with him one-on-one. A blind man named Bartimaeus, a tax collector named Zacchaeus who, you know, folks wouldn't give the time of day or give him any attention, or what attention they would give him would be with scorn and ridicule. And yet Jesus takes the time to focus on one. And so the challenge for us is to do the same as well. Yes, we need to see the masses, but we need to take the time to focus on the one, because we know that that's the way the Lord is with every single one of us. He sees you for who you are. He knows everything about you, the good and the bad. And he loves you and he knows you in a personal way. And so that's the challenge for us. We think of the big world and all the people who need Jesus, but there are times that we just need to step back and say, Lord, just lead me to one. Help me to influence one. Is there somebody in your life right now, let me ask you, who needs Christ? Who needs to know Jesus? Who doesn't? I encourage you to focus on the one and pray for the one and ask God to help you and use you to reach out to the one. But here's something else about Jesus. It's clear that Jesus saw her worth. But when it comes to the attitude of the people of that day, especially the Jews to the south, the Judeans, the others who didn't live in Samaria, they would not consider her very much of a really good prospect. I'm going to tell you that right now. I don't know everything related to her circumstances. And certainly I'm not saying that in her life it was just as it was portrayed by Jesus in this conversation with her. But she was going to that well in the middle of the day for a reason. The text tells us that, you know, points out that detail. It's not just an idle detail. And it also says when the disciples had gone into town to get food and they are coming back, what they're thinking is, why is Jesus even talking with her? Why is Jesus even talking to this woman? It says it right there in the text. And that's when Jesus says, look, you've come with food. I have food that you don't even know about. This is my purpose. This is what feeds me, is doing the will of the Father, which includes sharing this message. And here's something amazing about the entire story. This woman becomes an evangelist. Jesus shows her worth in many ways, in talking with her, with asking her for a drink of water, and then of all things, doing what we don't have anywhere recorded in the Bible that he's done up to this time, revealing himself in a personal way to this woman, of all people. But he did it for a reason. Because I don't have any doubt that Jesus knew when she was confronted with the reality of who he was, that she would do what she did. And she was excited. Nobody had to twist her arm to go tell others about Jesus. I mentioned last week that a lot of us were just uncomfortable about evangelism. Let's be honest about it. And we have these ideas about evangelism that make us uncomfortable. Am I going to have to do this or that? I don't know how to reach other people. And yet, at the core of who she was and who we are people excited about a message. And not just a message, we are people who are excited about the individual who is the content of that message. She became an evangelist, so the question is, are you an evangelist? And I know a lot of times we think of an evangelist as the guy, and I tried to pick out a little cartoon with somebody that looks a lot like me. Can you see a resemblance there? But a lot of times we think of an evangelist in these terms, but the word for evangelism or an evangelist is simply somebody that shares good news. Do we have good news? I like the song by Mercy Me. It's not just good news. What do they say? It's the best news ever. We have a message to share. And while we may not be a pulpit minister, I love this definition found on an online dictionary about who an evangelist is, a person who seeks to convert others to the Christian faith, especially by public preaching, a layperson engaged in Christian missionary work. And then the third definition is a zealous advocate of something. And then the example is he is an evangelist of junk bonds. And I couldn't help but thinking when I first read that, like, I'm more like an avid evangelist of junk food. All right, that would be me. But it's more than, and it's broader than, just somebody who gets up and preaches on a Sunday or stands on the street corner and preaches, and or somebody who goes on a mission trip, as important as that is. And so when they're coming up and Jesus is speaking to them and he's saying, I have food that you don't know about, Jesus says, don't say 4 months and then the harvest. I tell you, open your eyes and look at the fields. They are ripe for harvest. And this is what I picture. I picture these people from Sychar, the town where she lived. She's gone to them, and she's being a living witness of Jesus. And now their curiosity is comes up within them. And then I see them walking, you know, over the hillside to Jesus, and Jesus is saying, "Don't say that there aren't opportunities here. Don't say, maybe one of these days we can reach these people. The harvest is now. The harvest is ripe. Open your eyes." I love the song by Brandon Heath. It may be over a decade old, but he says, give me your eyes for just 1 second. Give me your eyes so I can see everything that I keep missing. Give me your love for humanity. Give me your arms for the brokenhearted, the ones that are far beyond my reach. Give me your heart for the once forgotten. Give me your eyes so that I can see. The song goes on. I've been there a million times, a couple of million lives, just moving past me by. I swear I never thought that I was wrong, but I want a second glance. So give me a second chance to see the way you've seen people all along. And to me, that's a key. And you and me being living witnesses, living proof in our own lives of Jesus Christ. When we can see the world and we can see individuals through his eyes, then he's going to bless us in our efforts as we try to reach others. The disciples saw in this woman someone who was washed up, not worthy. They were even wondering why he was talking with her, and yet, what is she doing? She's the one going out and reaching others for Jesus. All they're thinking about it is their lunch. And Jesus said, no, so much more. And then he goes on to say, even now the one who reaps draws a wage and harvests the crop for eternal life. Thus the saying, one sows and another reaps is true. I sent you out to reap what you've not worked for. Others have done the hard work and you have reaped the benefits of their labor. You're standing here thinking about your lunch and here these people are coming to hear me. And what have you done? And he's not blaming them. He's just simply saying, you're going to be able to teach these people, and other people have already, this woman's already done the work for you. You have an open, receptive audience. And this is leads me to this last quick point, and I'm almost done. And we'll talk more about this next week. Evangelism is a team effort. And I know a lot of times when we think about evangelism and being involved in evangelism, and being personally concerned about reaching people for Jesus, we get this idea that maybe we have to be the one doing all the detailed teaching or doing those things, and that makes us feel uncomfortable, and I may not have the answers for somebody else. But if I were to ask you, who led you to Christ? And I've done this before in previous sermons. Who led you to Jesus? Would you just mention the person who baptized you into Christ? Or just the person who taught you the truths of the gospel? I know in my case, it was not that way. I was baptized by J.C. Davidson. I heard some of his preaching, but in terms of the influence in me being led to Jesus, he had far less to do with that than many other people did in my life. And a lot of it had to do with how they treated me, how they served me, how they showed Christ to me in their lives. And it's no different for us. And so going into next week, let me encourage you. Don't look at this little mini-series that I'm doing as, make me feel guilty about evangelism. That's not the purpose. The last reason in the world to share Jesus is feeling guilty and bad about it, right? It's a contradiction in terms. We have good news. And ultimately, and here's the close, and I'll have more to say about this from a practical standpoint next week. Ultimately, your task and my task in being a witness for Christ, in being living proof for Christ right now, where we are, where we live, is helping other people to discover who Jesus is, as he really is. That's what it's about. And I love the way the story ends. The Samaritans, they come to Jesus finally, and this is what they say. And because of his words, many of them became believers. They said to the woman, we no longer believe just because of what you said. Now we have heard for ourselves, and we know that this man truly is the Savior of the world. This woman played a role, and we play a role, But ultimately, it's about people discovering Jesus for who he is. That's our job. And in that process, sometimes we just need to get out of the way ourselves. But it's all about lifting him up and people seeing Jesus. We don't convert them to us. They come to faith in Jesus. And it's a very personal thing. Do you catch what's going on here when these Samaritans come? And they become believers? We've heard it for ourselves. And we believe that you're the one. And so I close this morning by saying this. Don't forget that faith in Jesus ultimately is very much a personal thing. And living our faith in Jesus isn't just about going to church. It's not just about following rules. It's about believing and having a relationship with one we discover for who he is. And the more we hold Jesus up, the more people are going to be drawn to him. The fields are ripe for harvest right here in Cincinnati. The fields are ripe right where you are. And God can use all of us in that task. So I close by just encouraging you, wherever you are in your journey, wherever you are in your faith in Jesus, we want to walk along with you. And we want to be available for you. So please don't hesitate to reach out to us anytime. Because we want to help you not discover us, but discover Jesus for who he is. And once you discover that, your life will never be the same. Let's sing.